going to introduce our speaker, who is Rita Dillick. And Rita is the department head of the program of visually impaired from Vancouver Community College in Vancouver, Canada. So she's actually going to speak to us about education in Canada and in Turkey. And then after she's finished, I would like to leave some time because we do have Peter from Germany, and I heard that there were, you know, some people from different countries that may want to tell us how children who are visually impaired or blind are educated in their countries. So without any further ado, let me bring on Rita.
Okay, do you want me to come over here?
That would be good. The mic's right here. That'd be great.
Okay. So I'm the reason I'm covering two countries is because I grew up in Turkey, but that was a long time ago. But I do have I've kept track a little bit of what's been happening there now. And then I've been living in Canada for over 25 years. So the trends between the two countries are quite different. So in Canada, there were, in the 70s, there were three residential schools for the blind, and people were, you know, bused or went by train to those three schools from all over the country. And then after that, now there is only one residential school left in Ontario. The other ones were West Coast, BC, and then in the Maritimes, Halifax, which is all the way to the east, and the third one was in Ontario, and that's the only one that now remains. So the trend in Canada has been to mainstream the students and, you know, have them included in the regular school system. But to adapt with that, there are it varies from province to province what services the students get. Essentially, you're covered from, in BC where I live, from age 5 to 19 through the school system and 0 to 5 through the health system. And somewhere around age 2.5, you can go to a supported preschool type of program. I talked to two teachers of the visually impaired in BC, you know, who actually do the work, and I got a sense of what their how things are done. To some extent, I understand it's similar to what some parts of the states are doing. So they're trying to do this extended core curriculum where the students are taught life skills as well as the academic skills. What works out is for the early years, the student gets more contact with the teacher of the visually impaired. The teachers of the visually impaired, TVIs, they travel from school to school, so the students are at their own neighborhood schools, and the teachers travel around. And then the rest of the time, the student is integrated into the regular classroom. The supports come from, there is a provincial center that provides a lot of Braille. There's also loans of Braillers, adaptive equipment from a different agency, and e-text. So the first things, like one of the teachers is also an O&M instructor. This is not always the case. Some of them are O&M instructors. So they start the students quite early with O&M around getting around the school, and eventually later on getting to school, that type of thing. But in terms of the teaching, the TVI teaches the adapted skills, and then the student is supposed to do the rest of the work with the regular classroom. So in the early years, they might get 10 hours a week with the teachers of the visually impaired, and later on maybe a few less hours per week. The way it works is that they one of the teachers that I was talking to said that she found that for totally blind students, they also end up having special needs assistance. But she wasn't very happy about that, because then the special needs assistant ends up doing things like making the student sandwiches and even unwrapping the food and things like that. And she said, you know, like some of the school districts, you know, they shouldn't be doing it, because, you know, the student doesn't get to learn the skills that they should be learning at the same time as the sighted students should be learning. So there's a bit of a disagreement about that. That doesn't seem to happen as often with the partially sighted students. But at the same time, you know, some of it would depend on the parents and whether the parents encourage learning of the skills. But the aim is to learn all the life skills as well. And in terms of, you know, getting access to information and technology, you know, what they said was the important thing is, for instance, learn Braille at an early age. Even, you know, good. Anyway, but the thing is, like, sometimes if it's a partially sighted student, there is a feeling that maybe they should be allowed not to learn Braille, but if they don't learn it early enough, then they won't have enough speed, and if the sight goes worse or whatever, they might have a hard time if they're going for higher education, because by then it's too late to spend a lot of time trying to learn the Braille. And there is also there's been statistical info that people who've learned Braille do better with employment later on. So that's an important thing. Now, some of the students have more than one disability, and in that case, they do need the special needs assistance. You know, they have some students that, you know, have mobility impairments, etc. Now, the other things, there's been a lot of work with, moved away from it. Okay, there's been a lot of work with using eye devices for, you know, access to information. It seems it works well, and a lot of the teachers have been experimenting with that type of thing. Okay, I'm gonna cut this short. If anybody has questions, I can answer. But those are the basic ideas. There is a lot of borrowing. Oh, the other thing is, one of the teachers that I talked to said that they want people to start using Braille displays by about grade 3. She said by that time they've learned enough Braille on paper, and they know enough to keep their hands clean, et cetera, so that would work out okay. So, and if you do it early enough and get them in set up with laptops, et cetera, by grade 4 or 5 at the latest, so that they're up with technology with the rest of their classrooms. So, okay, that's enough for Canada, I think, and if people have questions, I'm happy to answer. I'm going to go to Turkey now, and I grew up there. When I was diagnosed in the late 50s, my parents were told that they should keep me at home. There wasn't any point to anything. And, of course, they didn't do that. There were two schools for the blind at the time in the 60s. There was one was about 400 miles away, and the other one was about 1,000 miles away. So, and those were the only two schools for the blind that were available. and you know, people, they were residential, of course. So the trend in Turkey has been to go in the opposite direction from Canada. And what they've done is there are a lot more schools for the blind. Right now, I did a survey of what schools were available, and there are now 9 schools for the blind in a lot of the major centers of the country. Some are residential, some are day schools, and some are both, so that, you know, people who live in the area can actually go to the schools from their homes every day. And the thing to say in favor of these schools where the blind students are concentrated is that it's more efficient. The Canadian approach is a lot more, uses a lot more resources and uses a lot more, you know, teachers running around from one school to another, that type of thing, and then trying to integrate. So whereas what they've done in Turkey is they concentrate the blind students, and then, you know, you've got the supports there, the resources right at the school, and it works well in a country that doesn't have a lot of resources to have teachers running around all over the place. Now, the other thing that's interesting for Turkey is there's, as I understand it, about 700,000 blind people in Turkey, and only 1% have been either educated or employed. So it's a bit shocking. So they've been, you know, they're really trying very hard to improve the situation. And many people, in spite of that, I mean, there have been many people who are blind who have gotten into good jobs, a lot of lawyers and teachers, although the ironic thing is that up till about 7 or 8 years ago, a blind teacher could not be appointed to a job at a government school, you know, and most of the schools are government schools, so that was quite ironic. But that has changed, and, you know, you've got some blind diplomats and lawyers, etc. So it's going in the right direction. But by concentrating the students in the schools, they're at least trying to provide the education. And I'm not quite, you know, I've read some figures about it, and it's not entirely clear, but it seems that the number of blind students in the schools has quadrupled in the last few years. So it's definitely going in the right direction there. And the other thing to say about the situation in Turkey is the infrastructure for people with disabilities just isn't there. You know, like sidewalks are incredibly like high or uneven or whatever, so you can't get around safely. It works the same way with people with wheelchairs. It's kind of hard. So there was, you know, like one situation where, you know, I read something like a statistic where there were 40,000 blind people in Istanbul and 38,000 can't even get out of their homes. So it's not a good situation, and, you know, they're working to improve it. But things are not consistent. So there is a university in Istanbul where they actually have, you know, great supports for blind and visually impaired students, and they have e-text and braille displays, and they even have like a braille division in their library. So it's not consistent. You know, you get some really good services some places, and, you know, a lot of nothing other places. So that's about it for me. So, you know, if anybody has questions or if anybody wants to talk about their country, that would be great.
Question?
Yes.
Actually, two of them. In Canada, do they have something similar to our IEP situation in the United States? And Turkey, I was just curious if you know, is there a contracted form of Braille in Turkey, or do folks just use the, you know, great uncontracted Braille?
I don't know if there's contracted Braille, honestly. I've seen the uncontracted Braille, but I haven't seen it. I left Turkey when I was 19, and I only learned English Braille, you know, then for my own sake. And
there is not. The European Blind Union did a survey, but there's no contracted Braille in Turkey.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks. Okay. And to go back to the IEP question, they do IEPs in Canada. So whenever there is a blind student in a school, they have to have an IEP that's done by a teacher of the visually impaired.
So the parents are involved with that, like
yes.
In this country?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
Right.
That was very informative, by the way. One person that I would like to really hear from is Peter from Germany. If you could come up
and give you a quick rundown.
And give us a quick rundown of what is it like to be educated if you're blind or visually impaired in Deutschland.
Okay. Yeah, good morning, and well, thanks for having me. In Germany, education of the blind and visually impaired traditionally took place in residential schools up until, I'd say, the late 70s and early 80s of the last century. Then the teachers of the visually impaired actually were the ones to get started with the discussion whether integration might be possible or not. And we did. And it was working in some instances, was not working in others. It all depends on the support situation. Since Germany is a federal state and the organization of the education is under the authority of the individual federal state, it varies considerably from north to south. For example, in early 1981, they started in the most northern province of Germany, they started a school for the visually impaired, a school without students. There was the first center for really integrated education where they put together a whole lot of TVIs and other support staff who went out to the community schools to support the visually impaired students there. And they did that quite well. For example, a blind kid who started school during the first 3 or 4 years, he or she received 13 hours per week of TVI support. And that was quite good. Whereas in Bavaria, for example, if the local school administration was agreeable to admit a blind or visually impaired student to the public school system at all, this blind student received a maximum of 4 hours of TVI support per week. And some of this still holds true today, but the situation is... Yeah, it is really very diverse. We try to do the teachers of the visually impaired to support the students in the mainstream. They certainly try to teach the extended core curriculum, even though the basic TVI does not do daily living skills. That is daily living skills and O&M. That's there. We usually try to find specialists who do that. In addition to all the other stuff. So the teacher of the visually impaired who supports the students in the mainstream, he or she would be teaching things like Braille, assistive technology, and helping with some of the more critical subjects such as math or geography or the sciences. The ratio of integrated versus people in special schools is slowly but gradually moving away from the residential schools to the mainstream, especially after Germany signed the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, which in Article 24 focuses very strongly on inclusion. The big problem about this inclusive approach, however, is that the school administration systems, at least it seems to us, the teachers and the people in the organizations of the visually impaired in Germany, that the school system really tries to use this inclusive approach to save money. They are not right now for the blind and visually impaired and the hearing impaired, but for all the other, no, not the, the mentally disabled, but also for the other, for the physically disabled, for learning disabled and so forth, they are dissolving the special schools that were there both as special schools and as resource centers to supply the necessary skills and the necessary support for those disabilities in mainstream schools. But they are not really trying to do anything to improve the situation. They are distributing those teachers with special education qualifications to the respective to the regular schools. In Berlin, for example, where I live and work, there were three schools for physically disabled kids, all three of which have been dissolved over the last 2 years, and the system sent the special education teachers with that qualification to the community schools. But I mean, in most of these community schools, there is not a physically disabled kid. So what does this this poor teacher do? Well, he or she will just be put onto the roster, and then they will have to do regular classroom teaching. And we are in great danger of losing the specialist skills because, people just are not able to apply them anymore. They have no ways of working together, of just having, you know, peer support from their colleagues, and they're just losing those skills as time goes by. And we also see the same sort of thing in university programs where new teachers should be qualified, because those programs get cut back and some of the requirements fall by the wayside. For example, especially when looking at Braille in the field of blind and visual impairment, they still offer Braille courses in the three programs in Germany where they educate teachers of the visually impaired. But those Braille courses, you just have to sign up for them. There are no exams, and you don't have to prove that you really know Braille. The reasoning behind that is that they say, well, with the development, that there are fewer and fewer blind people around that are able to participate in regular education because of, you know, the medical progress. More and more people that are blind have multiple disabilities and will not really be able to participate in the regular education system. That's kind of the reasoning behind the lack of focusing on Braille. So generally, at the moment, I'm experiencing, or we all really experiencing, a situation where education for blind and visually impaired people is deteriorating in Germany, which is really most unfortunate. Just so to cut this short, but if you have questions, then feel free to ask.
I have a question, an intriguing question that I've always wondered. What was it like before the unification of Germany, before the fall of the wall and everything in both, Eastern and Western Germany children?
After the Second World War, starting in 1949, really, when East Germany started going its separate ways, They started their own system of residential schools. Before the war, there were residential schools all over the place. Really, every province, every state had at least one, depending on the size. But in East Germany, most of these schools were, at least in the beginning, when they set up the German Democratic Republic, they were neglected, and really people didn't really know what to do. But then some people thought, since education is one of the most important foundations of education and of society, that they were going to reestablish those residential schools, and they also had a very new school, because at the time there was only one high school where you could get your university qualifications. That was the one in Marburg in West Germany. But since the East Germans no longer had access to that, they set up their own in a small city in Brandenburg near to Berlin. And they continued that, and there was no attempt towards integrative education in East Germany all the way up until the fall of the wall. And then after that, after reunification, they certainly, you know, went the German way. So they introduced support systems with teachers of the visually impaired who supported kids in mainstream education. It got off to a very slow start, but then they are now very much at the same level as we are in the former West German states.
Does anybody have any other questions?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Go ahead.
Let the lady go first.
Oh, thank you. What is it like for students with visual impairments at university in Germany, both qualifying to get into the support systems while they're there?
The support system for students at university level has improved considerably. When I was a student in the late 70s and early 80s, there wasn't really very much in the way of support systems available. We had to try and recruit our own readers. We had to do a lot of transcribing of materials ourselves. And when I first came over to the U.S. in 1976 as an exchange student, I was really amazed and very, very pleased about the support system that I saw here. But that has changed quite a bit now. Most universities have a special support center for students with visual impairments, and especially with the advent of technology all over the place, most of the professors and teachers, they provide their materials in electronic format. There's lots of e-texts around. The university provides free internet access and free access to the university servers to the visually impaired students. So that has improved considerably.
And there was a gentleman that had a question.
Yes. Yes. You referred a second ago to the School for the Blind at Marburg. In the late 80s, a blind German student who was doing an exchange year in this country spent much of that year in my home. And we became fairly familiar with that practice. What is the status of that particular school now in the system of higher education? This particular gentleman went on to law school, et cetera, and is now a lawyer in the Hamburg area, I believe. His name is Peter Hauptler.
Oh, yeah, I know the guy, actually. Well, the school in Marburg is heavily sought after, because as I pointed out, the difficulties of integrative or inclusive education, so many, many parents, especially after the first 4 years of elementary education, which very often happens in a mainstream setting, they find that their kids do not get the necessary qualifications, especially not in the extended core curriculum stuff, you know, that they simply do not teach in the mainstream schools. So that's why the school in Marburg, they had and still have quite an influx of students. Also, many of them coming to Marburg after, say, 6 or sometimes 9 or 10 years in the regular school system, because they feel and their parents feel that with the support that is available in Marburg, it's much easier for them to achieve good university entrance qualifications, which, you know, then will enable them to undertake whatever course of study they want to do.
Question?
Yeah.
What are there online sources of books available to students? Do you have anything similar to Bookshare or Learning Ally or anything? Where do students get their textbooks if they in an accessible format?
Unfortunately, there are no online services similar to what you just mentioned. The universities, they do provide transcription of textbooks into either electronic format or sometimes, if people want it, into Braille. But we hope that with the Marrakesh wonder, the miracle, that we will maybe have access to international sources like Bookshare or like Learning Ally or like Tiflo Libros in Latin America. Or there are similar online services, for example, in the Scandinavian countries.
Wow. Well, that was very fascinating. Okay. And vielen Dank. Vielen Dank. Let me shake your hand.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter and Rita. Now, do we have anyone else? That I think there was a gentleman from China. What happened is I was arranging for the mic and I missed some of the introductions.
Carla, she said her English is not very good.
Well, that's all we can ask. I'm sure you'll do. I'm sure you'll do very well. And what is your name?
And my name is Ivy.
There is Ivy. Come on, the mic is right there, Ivy. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Ivy. I'm from China, Macau. Everybody know that. I'm studying in university. I joined this conference because I want to learn more things. In China, everybody know human rights is not very well. I live the city, Macau. There have many different casino. In China, Macau is a very development city. Yeah, the government have very rich, but like me, I'm visually impaired. In my life, education is not very well because the government not give me more value service and support for me to study. So my student life is not very well. Do you understand what I mean? I try to speak. In this conference, I saw many different countries, and like German, American, Vancouver, can give more things, the government give more things to some group to improve the education. I know visually impaired can have a good and high degree education, can live in the find their life value. In Macau, student, my visually impaired just stay at home, cannot do anything. Maybe in the street to sing a song. Macau people, Macau government just gave them every month some money to. They have no anything to can do, no job, no anything. Yeah, so I want to learn more from India. Okay, thank you.
Well, my name is Fikru Gebrekidan, and I've been called different names. Farouk, Petro, yeah, anything with F.
To the mic.
Yeah, okay. Could you now hear me?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, as I said earlier, I do have about three different identities, or even more. I was born and grew up in Ethiopia, went to school here in the States, and I'm a U.S. citizen, but I now live and work in Canada. So I would like to talk a little bit about the education of the blind in Ethiopia. Here in the West, it's actually a bit difficult to talk about places in Africa because of the images we have of poverty, famine, and what have you. In spite of all that, blind people in Ethiopia do actually get education. But we need to make a distinction also between literacy and education. Literacy, of course, means the ability to read and write either in Braille or in print. Education is a bit more, it's broader. In the Ethiopian context, even before the advent of Braille, blind kids, boys, used to go to parishes and get education, oral education. So as a result, actually, we've had blind boys growing up and becoming teachers themselves in parishes. By the way, Ethiopia has been a country where Christianity had been practiced since the 4th century. So when I talk about parishes, it's an old tradition in Ethiopia. So we do have a long tradition where boys would go and learn the Bible, to recite the Bible orally, and eventually grow up to also themselves become teachers of the Bible. So that tradition has existed for centuries. In the 19th century, when European missionaries arrived in Ethiopia, as they did elsewhere in Africa, they introduced mission schools run by missionaries. But the mission schools, unfortunately, only pandered or catered for the able-bodied. So this is a time when the gap between the blind and the sighted widened, because now the mission schools were teaching only those who could see, whereas earlier parishes and what have you had included the blind in their schools. That gap has existed ever since. But in the 1950s and in the 1960s, we do have the first schools for the blind being established. Most of them were established, again, by missionaries. So for the first time, missionaries began teaching Braille, began including the blind in their educational curricula. But again, even here, there was a problem. We do have different missionary schools introducing different standards and different visions for the blind. The vision of most of those missionaries was that the blind could only learn until the fourth grade, and then after that would receive some vocational training and would go on to support themselves, weaving baskets or, making carpets and what have you. But those vocational trainings didn't really make much difference in the lives of the blind. Most of those blind students who received those vocational trainings ended up in the streets as beggars. So in the larger scheme of things, their vision for the blind did not really make much difference. We do have one school for the blind that was started by the government. That school did actually produce blind students who went on to high school and the university, and a few of them even went overseas and received further education. And some have been employed as journalists, lawyers, many are teachers. So unfortunately, it's very difficult, I'm going to conclude. In the case of Ethiopia, unlike Canada or Turkey or even possibly China, it's very difficult to talk about one specific standard because, as I said, we have a hodgepodge of different standards by different missionary schools. You know, Salvation Army for the Blind, the Christopher Blind mission from Germany, other missionaries from Sweden. So there isn't one single standard. So it's very much hit and miss. Few have gone well, few have gone to do well as a result of going to the high school and the university, but most blind people, even if they received basic education in reading and Braille, their lives haven't changed. Simply because there wasn't much emphasis on higher education. So I'll just stop here. Any questions?
Is there a what is the Braille system like? Is it a contracted Braille system?
The Braille is not contracted, but there are very many individuals who are very fluent in reading Braille. That's actually what is something positive about the schools for the blind. They've done an excellent job in popularizing Braille. There is no contracted Braille, unfortunately. But those who read Braille, they read it very well. There is no contracted Braille, unfortunately.
And what is the employment
The employment, interestingly, unlike the lady who said earlier, in Turkey, government schools don't employ blind teachers. In Ethiopia, it's the opposite. Government schools do employ the blind who've graduated from the university with a, you know, with a teaching certificate. So, in fact, in general, the unemployment rate among the university-educated blind is very, very small. But on the other hand, you have like perhaps about 90 or 95% of the blind who haven't gone to university and therefore are unemployed, most of them begging in the streets.
Well, very interesting. Does anybody have any other questions before we conclude?
Is there a library for the blind, for those who've learned to read Braille that disseminates books?
Yes. There was and possibly still is a library for the blind. Most of the schools, most of the books are books from the United States. Actually, I grew up, you know, reading books from the United States. But on the other hand, the books are very old. Also, do not reflect the country's, you know, history or culture. So, but there is a library for the blind. But again, unfortunately, situations, instead of improving, now are actually getting worse. So the emphasis is now on mainstreaming. And remember, as I said earlier, Ethiopia is a very poor, it's one of the poorest countries. So when you mainstream blind kids and send them to regular schools, their parents might be too poor to even afford to pay for the transportation. Especially when you have a situation where, say, you have four children, three of them sighted and one is blind, you'd rather invest in the three sighted children and ignore the blind kid. So mainstreaming is actually having all kinds of adverse effects.
Can I ask a question to one of the previous speakers?
Yes.
The gentleman from Germany, I was very interested, you made reference to a European Union study about contracted Braille. I'm totally unaware of that. I wonder if you might...
That's for Peter.
Any other questions?
Any more questions? All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think someone was saying something. Thank you.
There's one more question.
Yeah.
How old were you when you came to the United States?
When I came to the United States, I was actually 19 years old. You know, I went to a state university in upstate New York. So that's how I began my...
Sorry?
Oh, okay. I was 19 years when I came to the United States. Yes, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.